The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with two very exciting people, Brian Casper and Peyton Cozell-Turner of Flat Vernacular and Department of Decoration. Thank you for being here. Husband and wife team, we're going to get to that dynamic afterwards because we were just talking, me and my wife have the same hoarding problem that you do.
Well, I think I have the problem.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's both of your problem if you're married and you live in the same place.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very much my problem.
So we'll talk about how to vet that out and what tchotchkes to actually keep. But let's start about this pink drink at some Baltimore bar that met over. What was the name of
the
drink
research.
In the bar?
This is so embarrassing. So we met at the Depot, which is a dive bar in Baltimore, Maryland, where we both went to school. And I had a quote-unquote signature drink there that I would drink while underage called the My Little Pony, and it was basically grenadine and any type of liquor possible.
Usually sweet things, like Midori.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I have Crohn's disease now, but you know, it was really fun at the time.
Midori, I forgot, Midori is such a collegiate and then maybe very elderly thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So skips generations.
I've gone for a good decade or so without it. I may reintroduce it because of that.
I'll make you a My Little Pony.
Okay, yeah. Oh man, I should have had that. I should have really researched and had those waiting for us.
That would be fantastic.
Next time.
Okay, the embarrassment out of the way. You two met at art school. But backgrounds, not necessarily, you know, of wallpaper, of paper products, of two-dimensional. I mean, though painting is, sculpture wasn't. So
no.
Talk to me about the arts and your path to that.
Well, when you say sculpture, I mean, first I need to sort of get the definition out there. You know, my major, which was officially called General Sculpture Studies, which essentially just means making proposals and pinning them to the wall. General sculptural studies students really liked Amata Clark and conceptual based work. So, you know, I ended up moving more into screen printing halfway through my time there just because I needed some sort of structure. And that's where the 2D starts to come in my life,
also,
so to speak.
You like actually making things.
Yeah, the production side of things. And I think, you know, it sort of started to frustrate me in school when no one was making anything. Everyone was just talking about making things, and you talk about that for another hour.
Well, you're obviously good at pinning stuff up on walls. I mean, Flat Vernacular was born possibly out of that function.
Yeah, potentially.
That's true.
Yeah. and just a sort of a desire to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, which is some of my background too, just coming from a blue collar sort of, you know, from Milwaukee.
We're going to get back to Milwaukee
because
I love
Fair
the
enough.
Cream City
Working
Bricks.
Cars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and randomly know that reference because the brewers used to be called the Cream Cities.
Right.
Like way, 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 way back. Back to you guys.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah. And painting.
Yes.
Flat Vernacular is a wallpaper company at its core. But the majority of what you do is really hand-drawn. So how
Absolutely.
Did painting have a hand in that?
I think first and foremost, I've always been an illustrator and a drawer, and I'm much better at both of those things than actually painting. And through school, I discovered that about myself and also discovered that I wanted to focus on decoration and bringing a more tangible, accessible idea, product, or image into the home. So it made sense to me to sort of bridge the gap between actually trying to produce, you know, paintings and drawings to make more of an installation piece, which turned into my sticker wallpaper, which then sort of snowballed into this idea that wallpaper had something to it. I could be an artist and still make it at the same time. So it was very organic, and it's very relative in my mind.
Decoration kind of gets a bad rap in art school just because it's seen as a product and not as art. Let's just
not an expression.
Not to get into the conversation right. of what is art, but just in general, Bain was sort of discouraged from going down that road in school, while in school.
The decoration.
Yeah. Yet home decor and interior designing sure. has a whole nother, kind of echelon to it. I mean, you go into a space and you see how beautiful it is. There's some kind of recognition of who did that. Why is decoration or decor looked down upon?
Well, I mean, conceptually, you could argue that it's far less complicated and far less intellectual than, let's say, studying fine art, making pieces of fine art. But I don't necessarily think that it has to be that.
I mean, you have to have a hand or a foundation in it.
Right.
And an eye and an aesthetic.
And this is where there are many reasons I brought you on today. But one is the parallels to kind of the food movements today. You know, you see fancy and then you see farm to table. In those exhausted terms, but it's really about having something accessible, having something real, having something from the surrounding areas. And that's where you get, I know you don't want me to use this word.
That's okay.
Inspiration.
Yeah.
That is where we get inspiration. Yeah, You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Which is more of a feeling than it is a specific, we draw inspiration from this one thing or this one person, to get inspiration just from an idea.
Or a larger concept.
Much more likely.
I know you two are wonderfully eclectic in those tastes. I mean, look at some of the first flat vernacular, wallpapers. Tell me about the car crash, the derby.
Yeah,
that was
the derby.
Good call. Yeah. That was the absolute first thing. Not the first thing necessarily we designed, but it was the first thing that we printed.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Mostly because it was one color.
Yeah. Well, what was it? I mean, what brought you to bring that to life?
That one specifically?
Yeah.
I've been in 5 demolition derbies.
Yes.
And that is essentially, I think every contemporary wallpaper, and I shouldn't say every, that's a broad generalization, but I think most who want to do something sort of illustrative has a toile in their tool belt. And so when we made the toile composed entirely out of demolition derby cars, it was just more or less like, well, how can we make toile funny that's no one else has done before?
And love that pattern.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And I have so many questions about Demolition Derby. And I'm going to try to stay on task. But from there was dandelion creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of your obsession with small animals came into play.
Right. I think we tried to focus on being narrative for our first collection and ran with it, whether that meant an illustrative toile about Brian's love for Demolition Derbies or... my weird love for capybaras, which are, if you don't know, the world's largest rodent, and they reside in South America. And if you look them up on YouTube, you will be a very happy person.
Have you ever eaten a capybara?
I would never.
Really?
Never.
I know you're going down to New Orleans soon, and there is a water rat called Nutria, which is
right,
the southeast.
And it's an invasive species, so.
Well, actually, they say the fur is the only sustainable fur.
Really?
And they actually, because it's killing off this invasive species.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but maybe I would.
You like its mystique more than...
I do.
Than it's, I mean,
have you seen a capybara?
I've seen a nutria, so I'm just scaling up.
No.
I'd scale up a guinea pig. Don't scale up a nutria.
They have these, round faces, and they just look so cute. You want to stuff them in your arms and squeeze them. Nutria's not so much.
Pygmy hogs.
So cute.
Wombats.
So cute. So mean, but so cute.
Wombats are the meanest of
that. Have those really strong back legs that will, do some serious damage to you if you mess with one.
Yeah, no, I've never had the opportunity to, but I'm glad I got that warning
mind.
Now. I will certainly heed it. But putting these things up on a wall, do people say, "Well, I have this idea for you"? How do they interject? Because I know the sticker series is literally stickers
literally.
On a wall.
Mm-hmm.
No two are the same.
You mean how do they interject in
Well, how does someone come to you, with an idea or with a space and say, "I want you to put wallpaper up"? Do they pick a specific thing or do you design out of that?
Both, actually. We do custom wallpapers and we have done them in the past for all different spaces and all different people. And then we also sell our wallpaper and do our wallpaper all the time.
I think people come to us for our point of view more often than their own point of view. We expected the company to exist in this very sort of custom world, you know, where we would be designing things really to people's specific tastes. But I think the people who have those ideas in their heads already, or want to commission something like that, already kind of know what they want. And to the point where they may have even already kind of started designing it. And it's just not a road that we go down. But now after, you know, being in business for 4 years, people sort of come to us for a specific sort of feeling, point of view, design sense. And they know that they can get that from us. So usually they find what they're looking for in production paper. The only thing is that, which we do all the time, is the custom colorways of different things is probably the more common customization that we find.
Well, let's talk about a specific job, Lena Dunn's apartment in Brooklyn Heights. How were you approached? How did someone find you to be able to apply all those stickers?
She just emailed me. So it was just the two of us talking back and forth about what she liked and what she wanted. And then we had a meeting and she picked out, you know, a couple of papers she liked. And that's sort of it.
That's it. So anybody, you don't have to
anybody.
Be of the girl's ilk to be able to have stickers on your wall.
Not at all.
Well, Lena also, I mean, I think Lena and Peyton share very similar sort of points of view and about the world and design and cute things in general that I think when she came to Peyton, it was, they just hit it off and it was sort of finishing each other's sentences in a very easy to design for a client.
Oh, that's nice. I don't know. Maybe.
You don't agree?
No, I do. I think we have kindred design sensibilities for sure.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic. I love her.
You know, I was actually introduced to your work via the bathroom of Julie Bainbridge, who's been on the show. And
I know.
It's very rare that you get to say, oh, I met this person in, well, not even in, because of somebody's bathroom. Talk to me about that floral pattern.
I love that floral pattern. That's... It's called Full Bloom, and it's... the colorway is Silver Sword. It's printed on a metallic paper.
Mylar,
thank you. It's a CMYK print. It's only four colors, but it looks photographic, and it looks like you could lick it.
It utilizes a similar technique that was used for, you know, comic pages and newspapers back in the day. You know, if you look at those old ones with a magnifying glass, you see the dots, individual dots, and it's a similar technique. Which sort of is where I come in to play with something like that.
I actually, you know, I did photography pre-digital, so in analog, and did 3D sublimation printing, you know, dye matrix printing.
Right.
So you see the register, and you see, and it was partially. Oh, and I didn't lick it when I was in her bathroom. I certainly,
it looks like
did.
You
yeah,
could,
it
though.
Certainly does.
It
I mean,
looks tasty.
I touched it. I rubbed it a whole bunch because it's so textural and layered.
Yeah.
But. I saw the handicraft in that, and obviously the design, and I needed to know more. Obviously, there's the floral or flora reference, and there's a little bit of, I don't know if it's berries, food. There are things that are touched upon, like boysenberry jam and cream puffs.
Absolutely.
But it's not directly in-your-face jam. What are those two prints, and what was the thought behind those designs?
Cream puff and boysenberry jam,
mm-hmm.
you mean? Well, they're actually the same. Both of those are the same pattern, actually, which is called folded, which is just, it really is a striped shirt that was crumpled up. It's our take on the stripe. So they sort of fold in on each other. And honestly, the names for the colorways themselves, boysenberry jam, it straight up looks like boysenberry jam. It's that super vibrant sort of red, slightly burgundy color. And cream puff. Kind of getting back to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That one is sort of this reddish orange color on cream. So it's very sort of carnival looking. And the Wisconsin State Fair is famous for its cream puffs.
Which we went to very early on in our relationship when we did a cross country road trip.
Yeah.
So
we had to name it after
it all comes back down to food.
It does. Cream puff and cream city.
Mm.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that brick really quickly.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's a lot in New York as well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the history, but I do know that it is everywhere, and it's actually getting to the point now, whenever they tear something down in Milwaukee, that a lot of people save them because they don't make them anymore. And I think it just comes from the sort of sand or whatever it is that they used. But it's this, I mean, it's a beautiful yellow, creamy color, and Milwaukee has the nickname the Cream City because of it. So therefore, Cream City Brick.
Wildflowers, lichen, hydrangea, fruit doves. Again, a lot from nature.
Absolutely.
And this kind of segues into what you're doing now, mm-hmm. the amazing Department of Decoration. Because I remember when I was in your studio, you said, we have something that's kind of moving from 2D to 3D. We can't tell you what, but it's going to be very exciting. It is very exciting.
Thanks.
It's here, and we're going to take a quick break and come right back to it. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Thank you to Rolling Press for sponsoring, and how kind of apropos that we have a paper company for...
We love paper.
Yeah. Hoarders.
Hoarders.
There's way too much paper in my house. Not unfortunately. I mean, thankfully there's some kind of archive, some paper trail somewhere of all these tangible things that we've done, because I worry. I worry sometimes. But we're here now in the 3D world talking about Department of Decoration. How did this business concept out of Flat Vernacular, or are they two separate entities?
They're two separate entities, but we couldn't have one without the other, I don't think.
Yeah, they're sisters.
They are sisters. Department of Decoration was born out of a desire to do other objects for the home, simply put, and to give us a platform for a collaboration with other companies to allow us to be more multidisciplinary in our everyday work life, I suppose.
So tell me about the launch, because what Department of Decoration is, you know, home decor, dinnerware, tableware, even chairs. I mean, it's homeware. But you're doing it room by room.
We are doing it room by room, and everything's in the limited edition capacity.
The way we're going to approach each room is to have, you know, essentially a launch for each line, or each, let's call it each year, each room. And it's you know, it's meant to be something that is for people to interact with and not just to view or click on a website. So the first room was dining room. And so obviously our first launch was to actually have a dinner. We did four nights of dinner and one last night of sort of cocktails. And there were performances each night. We had jugglers and a cappella group, as well as an interactive sort of wall where people were also creating a pattern, because one of the courses was a marker. And, you know, we wanted to do it, and we wanted to do the dining room first in particular, is because we wanted people to have a conversation. I mean, dining is about conversation and company, and we wanted people to not only look at things and talk about them, but also to use them and interact with them. And there were some really great moments where people realized that, oh, you also made this, and you also made that, and you also made that. Not just, this isn't just rental stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, talk to me about the whole line, because it runs the breadth of, you know, silverware, all that flatware, porcelain plates, you know, napkins.
Linen napkins that come in three different sizes. We have two different porcelain plates, dinner plates and small plates, and they were sort of modeled after what I thought, or what I do think and do see, as stones being washed over and over and over again by the sea. So they almost have, you know, an organic, smooth, flat shape. And we did a collaboration with Chairloom, which is a company in Philadelphia who does beautiful reupholstery work. So they worked with us for the 40 antique chairs that were painted as if they were dip dyed and then covered with our fabric. And all of the patterns we used for that collection came directly from wallpaper patterns, actually, that we made from for Flat Vernacular as well, to sort of give a bridge between the two companies and talk about how, you know, we're moving from one to the other and why. And they were all inspired by different elements found by the sea, essentially.
The chairs in particular actually touch on one of the aspects of the company that we really hope to move forward with, and it's collaboration. We want to work with companies that we like, that they like us, and also that we can trust a little bit. With Chairloom in particular, and making those chairs, we essentially just sent them yardage of all different things and just said, go with it. And they were into it, and we were into it.
They're fantastic.
Yeah, couldn't have gone better.
And the linens. A lot of them have like that aqua-looking dye, you know, from
either
bluish,
deeper blue, deeper greens to brighter cyans. Some of our chairs actually were pink with a beautiful sort of sunset-esque fabric. So everything sort of felt fluid and watery and as if you were sitting by the sea, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to dinner parties based around the idea of blue because it's kind of one of those things in food.
So it is.
Where there isn't that much other than like blueberries and maybe blue curacao.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a funny color. It's a great contrasting color, but it's not really a color associated with food as much as I think. And for you to have that palette, obviously, like the sea, like the sky, only seemed natural. I mean, the way you put your space together felt very serene and kind of, you know, outdoor environment.
That's so nice to hear. That's what we were aiming for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you did it then.
Yay.
Congratulations.
Next up is the bedroom, which will be exciting and an altogether different experience. So.
I'm going to admit the fact that sometimes I eat in the bedroom. I sit at the edge of the bed and snack a little. But
I sit in the bed, in the sheets, and have
Which is one of the tricks of, you know, the launch for the bedroom, because we definitely want to have, you know, sort of a, you know, cocktail or food involved. And we are talking with someone who's like, what about doing something that's things you eat in bed?
Yeah.
Which would be really
fun.
What are things you eat in bed? Because
I don't.
No.
I have a rule. And
yeah.
Peyton only eats things in bed when I'm not around.
It's true. I love it.
We could call each
pizza.
Other. No, actually, my wife eats in bed sometimes.
Okay, yeah. I'll join you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll come over.
Pizza?
Yeah.
That's daring.
It's so good. You're so cozy. The bed is my favorite place.
Yeah.
I do my best work in bed. Always.
So the bedroom is going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bit of a departure from the dining room.
How so? I mean, as far as the design aesthetic, because I know like a lot of these matte glazes and again, these blue hues were particular to the dining room.
Right.
Taking that, you know, aesthetic outside.
And that's specifically why, well, most of the reason why we wanted to do this or focus our company on doing objects for the home, one room of the home at a time, because then, you know, it can be a complete departure from what we've done in the past. So the palette for the bedroom is going to be very dark, very sultry. Some of the things we're making use contrasting materials on the same plane, so resin and brass or silk and organic cotton.
I think, you know, when we did the dining room, we wanted there to be sort of an obvious relationship between Department of Decoration and Flat Vernacular. So the color palette and the feeling is very similar to what, you know, we've done with that company. But now that we've drawn that line and people can kind of get and understand that it comes from us, we can have a lot more fun with the bedroom because, you know, we don't always want to put pink on things.
I do.
Well, we do. But at the same time, we want to do some just really
weird,
dark
stuff.
Yeah. Sexy.
Well,
or
on
weird.
On that,
weird,
you're talking
sexy.
Bedroom and you're married. How does design... That was the worst segue I could have thought of.
Where are we going with
this?
Sorry, Mom.
Yeah, this is... We're not FCC regulated. We could be a little more cussy. I can't believe I used the word cussy for being able to use
it.
So many other
cussy.
Wonderful words. But, you know, being married, there's a design aesthetic. There's a decor, I'm sure, in your house. And you guys are very similar in how you work and what you like. But I know, Peyton, you love little tchotchkes. You love little things you collect. So how do those adorn your house, and how do those, Brian, drive you crazy?
Wow. Good. I mean,
a lot of my small stuff lives in drawers, and I just take it out when Brian's not home.
But at the same time, I like to collect things, too. And I think it's yeah. more just being able to step back and say, okay, what do we need to keep
yeah.
of this?
Yeah, what is actually worth having a collection of? So we have some Depression glass. That's one of our big collections. I love books, so I have a ton of books.
But I think Peyton just likes, you know, the smaller the better, which maybe is how this works best, because then it can live somewhere hidden away.
Yeah.
Tiny little dollhouse pots and pans.
Yeah.
But I'm saving them for something. I'm not going to talk about it today, but I am actually saving all my small stuff for something. And it's not a baby.
No. I mean, these seem even too micro for a child.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, are you into mini food? Are you into, like,
yeah,
micro things?
Yeah,
mini food has been fascinating.
Like, no, I don't mean, like, baby carrots. Like, what's the smallest food that you...
Well, I have these funny Japanese, these plastic Japanese... little mini fish cookies that are so tiny I can barely hold it in my hand. My hand like shakes and I drop it because it's so small. There's nothing really to hold on to. I love those.
My favorite thing.
It's like a visceral reaction for me. I'm like shaking mini just fans. Talking about
yeah.
it.
Here's a recipe for your users.
Yeah.
Users, listeners. My mom used to make mini cheeseburgers, but they were cookies. It was two Nilla wafers for the bun. A Girl Scout, what are they, Thin Mints or whatever, for the meat, and then she would actually use like red and green frosting to make for the ketchup and the lettuce, and then she would sprinkle a little bit of coconut on top of the Nilla wafer to make the like sesame
seed.
And
this was way before Pinterest, so
yeah.
that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure there's better.
That is actually, I think, the cutest thing that has ever been said on the food scene, yet alone possibly heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it came from
me. Good job, Brian.
Yeah. But, you know, again, this comes from inspiration. I know. Coming from all places.
It's
because,
true.
But a lot of it's rooted in these weird kind of like food dynamics.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, even when I was little, I was obsessed with fake food. Fake food, dollhouse food.
It's a lot of memories around food, too.
Yeah.
And just, I have specific memories of different events, you know, just based on what we ate sometimes.
It's true.
You know?
And I have tons of cookbooks. I collect cookbooks. I think it's really comforting in so many ways. And it tells so much about history, which I find fascinating. Like, if you read the Laura Ingalls Wilder books growing up, you read all about what, you know, the pioneers ate and didn't eat. And I love that. I love being able to sort of trace that history through things like recipes and food and miniature foods and other small things.
So design, I mean, department decoration obviously set a scene for these gathering for these events. But what kind of food was actually served? What do you expect to be shown on your plate?
Or in general.
The launch, you mean?
Yeah, both.
Well, what were the names of the chefs? Sarah Kramer and...
The two Sarahs from Glossary.
The two Sarahs,
that's
yeah.
it, yeah. Who are now in L.A., but they served...
They serve beautiful crudité.
Oh, man. That's right. Crudité with like three different sauces.
You have to understand
sauces.
It was really stressful for us
yeah.
putting on this kind of production.
Yeah.
And we worked with the Spring Street Social Society, and their part of the bargain of working together was that they would curate the food and find the chefs. So we sort of left it in their hands, but Sarah and Sarah did a beautiful job. There was a beautiful fish and a beautiful,
right,
like these amazing sauces. It was Mediterranean inspired.
There was a lamb.
A lamb, which was delicious.
Yeah, and blues just seemed kind of amazing pops for that.
They were.
You know, Mediterranean
that
scenery.
Palette,
yeah.
yeah.
Well, that was the nice thing about, you know, everyone that we worked with, including the performers that the Spring Street people found, is everyone sort of, you know, they kind of all related to things that we had done and our sort of aesthetic. And I don't think the food was any different. They didn't know exactly what they were getting. We had some examples and some prototypes for them to see. They knew they'd be everything would be served on something a little bit different. But I think they definitely related a lot of the food. I mean, the pink of that, like, tuna that they served.
Yeah, it was beautiful on the plate, on the white plate with the blue
yeah.
behind it and the candlelight. It was very, very, very beautiful.
I want to start a charge against getting rid of white plates in restaurants.
Oh, church.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I'm not going to knock the big service companies. Well, no, I am. Because, you know, it's so cheap, it's so easy. And when we talk about handmade, when we talk about locally made, you know, obviously the expense rises a little bit.
Yes.
And I'm assuming Department of Decoration is not, well, can be used every day, but not the everyday price of going to, like, Target. Not that I would ever tell someone to do that.
No. Unfortunately, we couldn't compete with those prices and still, you know, do a limited edition.
We also don't have starch space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely not.
But, you know, you have these events, you have these gatherings, and they're thought of as special occasions.
Right.
But really, they should be every day.
Every day.
Yeah.
Because they're inspired by everyday things. They're utilitarian, and, you know, they're not just design focused. And how important is it for you to make something not so precious, not so, you know, one off?
We've always been, even when Flaffernack, we've always said that people need to, when people are really wishy-washy about buying wallpaper, for instance, we always tell them to think of their favorite movie scenes and to treat their life in that way and sort of setting a scene. And I think if you surround yourself with beautiful things and, you know,
precious or not.
Yeah, I don't mean that in, like, beautiful, expensive things.
One
I just mean
kind.
It as, like, things that you like and create this environment. The home is an amazing place, and to create an environment that you want to be in and have people over to, I mean, that's how we know each other. A friend had us at the
dinner
same party.
Yeah.
Right?
It's so
because
important.
She wanted to show off her bathroom, for
yeah.
instance.
It's so important. It's definitely central to our lives, thinking about space, whether one-off or not one-off pieces or, you know, heirloom items or not. I think so much of this revolves around social occasion and especially eating together with people. So that was a tangent. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't.
But in a nutshell, I think that's it. I think people just really need to consider things a little bit more. And it takes time too. I mean, I think there's a lot of people feel this weird emptiness that it doesn't look like Remodelista. But it's going to take you a while to get there.
You talk about collecting.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You have an idea in your head of what you're going to use it for. And having just gotten married almost a year ago, you know, and gathering retro-tree things, we've been waiting a while to use the... We don't even have most of it unpacked.
Wow. But,
yeah. Well, that's another
we
problem
have weird
with hoarding. And
half sets of...
Yeah, yeah. We have things that we pull out slightly, but we're incorporating them into
right.
our everyday life.
And you feel precious about them, too. At
yeah.
least I do.
Yeah.
And don't use the wedding china. God.
But it's there to be used.
I know, and yeah. I want to use it. So we do try also to implement that in our everyday life, you know, using the wedding china for breakfast if we want to,
yeah.
not making it so precious.
Well, and using it, and when you use it for something just like a regular dinner at home, it makes that regular dinner at home feel a little special because you are using something that's not just a plate from Crate and Barrel, for instance.
That I've had since college.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can go in the microwave. The wedding china can.
Yeah. Let's vet those things out of our lives.
Yeah.
Like hashtag more dinner parties.
Yes.
All that, you know, it's a celebration of things.
Hashtag decorate every day. Decorate
yeah.
the every day.
Absolutely. And everyone should check out departmentofdecoration.com. That's DEPT.
Right.
Correct.
Of decoration.com.
Correct.
Of course, Flat Vernacular, because your walls look too bare.
Your walls do look too bare.
And
I'm
I don't care if you rent.
Right
I don't
now.
Care if you rent. You need to put a wallpaper.
Absolutely.
If nothing else, put it on the ceiling.
Yeah.
Ceiling.
Frame it.
Frame
yeah,
it.
I mean, you guys have framed.
And prints.
We
mono
do.
Prints. Beautiful
yeah.
mono prints.
There's so much you guys do, and I'm so excited to see room by room by room. And
we're so excited to do it, and thank
yeah.
you so much.
Again, departmentofdecoration.com. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.